Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale. Coming up next on the Wet Fly Swing Podcast.
The things that come out of my mouth now, I just got to slap myself sometimes. It's like, dude, I just called a 19-inch fish small. I just said 38 steel and to hand. Like, what in the absolute hell? I mean, this last year when we were out there, him and I just went out for a little evening sesh, and it was every cast. I mean, we were literally playing every other cast. Boom, steelhead. Boom, steelhead. Boom, steelhead. I mean, it's just nuts.
That was Adam Cuthrell taking us into Kodiak, the Carluck Brown Bears, and crazy steelhead numbers today on the swing.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Adam Cuthrell is back on the podcast to take us into one of the great steelhead rivers around the world. We discover how he was able to put together one of the only programs in this part of Alaska on Kodiak. We find out how and why you might want to book a spot with Adam if he's got some availability. And we also find out about this trip to Honduras with Cam, one of his main guides up in Alaska. Cam's got a cool program he's building down in Honduras. We're going to be talking to him soon as well. And we hear about the difference between Alaska and Honduras. So it was pretty awesome today. Every time I get Adam back on the show, it's always a good time, always some good laughs. So excited to share this one with you. Here we go. Adam Cuthrell from fishhoundexpeditions.com. How you doing, Adam?
Doing good. Just enjoying a nice wintry day up here in AK.
Nice. Yeah, I wanted to check with you on that. I'm curious, since we left you in September, right? How has it been now? We're in February. How has the winter been for you guys?
It's been good. It's not as snowy as the last couple winters had been. We're right around 400 inches, which for us is a little low tide, but been out in the backcountry a bunch and have had the little one up snowboarding a bunch as well. This is her second year on the board and super pumped for her. She just did her first, rail slide / box thing the other day all by herself. So nice. Good to see her having fun.
That's cool. Yeah, we did an episode. It was pretty fun with David Gravett, a professional skateboarder. And the guy was pretty funny. I think he cussed like 200 times. I think he said the F-bomb like 200 times. He smoked a bowl. And we did this episode. It started like it was like first thing in the morning. He smoked a bowl and got rolled. It was pretty funny. But it was interesting because the guy's like broken every bone in his body pretty much. And I'm curious with your kid, because my kids haven't been out doing the stuff like that yet. Are you worried at all that your kid's going to become this crazy, going off crazy jumps, or are you just fired up?
I'm fired up. That's kind of part of it. I mean, obviously she's my daughter. I don't want her to get hurt, but if it's something she wants to pursue further down the road, you gotta pay to play. I mean, when I snowboarded competitively, I did my ACL, broke my leg, two front teeth multiple times. So it's just nowhere near as hardcore as skateboarding, but gotta pay to play.
That's it. Cool. Well, today we're going to jump into Kodiak. We did the trip last fall, that epic trip and helicopter in the middle of Alaska. Did the whole thing. It was a crazy year because the water was so high, but we had a great trip. But we talked about Kodiak, and I was just thinking, and I have a connection. My dad used to go back when I was a kid, did the Kodiak thing. I always heard these stories about Kodiak. But you do this as a regular basis, right, at the end of the fall. So I want to dig into that today. Where do you start with people when they don't know anything about Kodiak? They've heard about it. Is it pretty straightforward putting this together, or do you need some serious skills to do this trip?
Well, you know, like all of our trips, there's a lot of logistics involved with, you know, air freight and gear and rafts and frames and oars and, you know, the million things that go with float fishing and getting that out to Kodiak. But, you know, I do all the booking and have been out hunting and fishing in Kodiak for a long time. So we have good air services and good logistics behind the scenes. So it's pretty straightforward, you know, call me up, go over it and get guest dialed in. They are super unique trips, as unlike most of our other trips where it is full on wilderness remote flow where you're tent camping and everything in there. With working with the Native Corporation, we actually built two small dry cabins out on two of the best runs of the river. So we're able to get a wilderness float. But instead of going back to a wet, cold, soggy tent, we have dry cabins that have generators, outhouses, oil stoves for heat, all surrounded by a bear fence. So, yeah, it's pretty comfortable to be out there. Yeah, yeah.
There you go. And what's the typical trip like of length when people are coming in? Does it vary or is there a standard length?
We do 6-day, 5-night trips out there on Kodiak, and each launch is limited to 6 guests per launch. So you pretty much have the whole place to yourself. You know, that's one of the coolest things about these trips is just how remote they are, and pretty much the lack of people and presence there is awesome, because everyone loves swinging for steelhead. But like, you know, down there in the lower Northwest, rivers can get pretty crowded. And I think this year, and all the trips that we did, we saw 3 other people. Pretty good. Cause yeah, we do get folks from the local village there who love to steelhead fish. So we'll occasionally see them. But, when we're doing our guided trips, it's just us working with the Kodiak Brown Bear Center.
Gotcha. So that's just you guys. So, and that's a good trip. So 6 days, 5 nights, and let's talk about the trip a little bit. So you drop in, how does that work? Do you just, is this a fly in as well? Or how do you guys, what's the first day?
Yeah. So kind of the basic outline for these trips is, say, hypothetically, you're on the October 3rd launch. You would want to arrive into Kodiak City on the 2nd, stay at a hotel or Airbnb of your choosing. On that 3rd, we pick you up at 8 a.m. at your hotel, take you down to the float plane base. There we get your gear put into our provided dry bags, and then hop on the float plane and head out to Karluk Lake. We typically land there at the lake at around 10 on that first day. We get guests orientated to the cabins and the main lodge and stash the gear. And then we go out fish that afternoon on that first day. There's 2 beautiful small tributaries of Karluk Lake that are just stacked with rainbow trout, sea run dolly varden, sockeye salmon, silver salmon, and steelhead. And there's tons of bears at those creeks. So you get some awesome bear viewing experience while chasing fish with a fly rod in your hand. That night, we come back to the lodge for an amazing meal. The chef there is just awesome. Appetizers, drinks, that whole deal. So that's the first day.
So basically, yeah, October 3rd, you start 8 a.m. And then so when you're at the lake, so there's a lodge. One of those lodges you built is right at the lake, or is this another lodge?
So this is another lodge. The really cool thing, how this all kind of just sidetrack here real quick, how this all came into existence is 5 or 6 years ago, one of my good friends here in Girdwood, he started the Girdwood Brewing Company, which is an awesome brewery, great beer. But he's also a huge fly fisherman and outdoorsman. And him and I were just kind of BSing about business and entrepreneurship. And I was like, man, you know, I just have one last piece of the puzzle. I need to find remote steelhead river. I really think the Karluk is where it's at, just because of the run numbers, the beauty. I was like, I just need to figure out a way to make it work. And he starts laughing at me. And I was like, dude, what the heck are you laughing at? And he goes, my wife is president of the Kodiak Native Corporation. I think I can get you a meeting.
Oh, wow.
And so met with her and gave her the proposal of working with them. And she loved it because she's a fisherman as well. We went out there, fished it together. And yeah, we've been working. This will be our 5th year doing trips out there commercially. So that's kind of how it all came into existence. And then when we were out actually with the head of the corporation, she was wondering, you know, what could we do to really set these from other float trips and other steelhead trips? And I was like, well, you know Kodiak just as well as I do. Weather's brutal. The tent camping on this particular river is pretty tough just because of all the tussock heads. It doesn't have big gravel bars like a lot of our rivers do in Western Alaska, where you can just camp anywhere. And I was like, well, if we could build some structures out here and have cabins to, you know, stay warm and dry and comfortable, it would be pretty unique. I mean, to my knowledge, the only other floats like this where there's, you know, permanent, semi-permanent structures were in Kamchatka, which we all know no one is going there anytime soon.
Yeah.
So to have that here in the States, you know, where you can get a wilderness float, have a warm place to stay at night and dry off, not to mention one of the largest steelhead runs in Alaska, is very unique and awesome.
There you go. So that's it. So, wow. And so the numbers, we're going to get into that a little bit on the fishing and some of the techniques and stuff, but let's keep going down that track. So night one, so you're there at the lodge or at the cabin, and then do you guys, are you doing another, are you staying there for a couple nights, or talk about the rest of the nights on the river?
Yeah. So we stay at the lodge two nights, which is awesome. You get like these trips, you get a lodge experience, you get a wilderness float, and you get a scenic river. The Karlik is just beautiful. We stay at the lodge two nights. On day number two, they have this beautiful, huge landing craft. And when we first got there, I was like, how the heck did you guys get this boat here? Because it's a massive, like 30-foot ocean landing craft. And they had it helied in and built there.
Jeez.
On the lake. Yeah, it's awesome. So on day two, we take that beautiful boat across the lake. And the bears have done a great job of putting in a nice walking path for us next to the river. And that first little stretch there has got some of the best swing runs on that river. 2 years ago, we had a gentleman 14 steelhead to hand swinging in two runs.
Oh, right at the outflow of the lake?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's awesome. So that second day, we spend walking and waiting up and down the Karlik there on the upper stretches, and then return back to the lodge for night number two.
Gotcha. Night number two. And then the rest of the nights are just floating down, and then you got the two other cabins that mixed in there in the next three nights, right?
Correct. So we stay at one of the two cabins two nights in a row, which is great. You get a layover day. Not that there's a ton of packing involved, but you don't have to pack all your stuff up. And it just gives our guests and guides another day to really work whichever runs are fishing the best. Because where we built the cabins, there's one on the middle river and then on the lower river. And they just access some of the best steelhead runs on that river. So it's nice to stay at one of those two nights in a row and walk and wait and swim. And then a short float down to the other cabin for the last night.
So that must be pretty cool for you after, you know, like doing the river trips, which we did with you. And it is a lot of work, right? It's a lot of fun, but it is a lot of work putting up the tents, doing all that stuff. How do you feel? Do you feel like when you come up to the Kodiak, are you like, okay, this is like a deep breath, a nice break? Does it feel like it's a break from the normal routine?
It does. I mean, myself and my guides were steelhead addicts. I mean, don't get me wrong. We love fishing for trout and salmon, but steelhead, definitely. They're the unicorns, you know, they hold a special place in our heart, and being able to get out there and experience this with guests and ourselves is very much a light at the end of the tunnel, because after a season, especially like last year where it was just super rainy, dealing with wet gear all the time and wet tents, and it does start to grind on you a little bit. And with Kodiak, you know, we get to go to a nice warm cabin. If we're cold, we turn up the heater. If we need to charge something, we fire up the generator. So no, we love it. We absolutely love it.
That's awesome. So, well, let's talk about the fishing a little bit, because that's something always, like you say, the unicorn, you know, there are a lot of times where you go out fishing in some places around in the country and, you know, you might get skunked, right?
Oh yeah.
So that didn't happen for you guys. Talk about that a little bit. What's a normal, maybe take us back to what is normal and then what's really good down there?
Oh man. I mean, I started steelheading down in your neck of the woods on the Deschutes. And if you got two or three, you know, you're a stud. Up here, if you get two or three, you're doing it wrong. I mean, it's fishing, steelhead fishing, you know, there are no guarantees, but numbers for most folks are typically anywhere from 8 to 15 to hand a day normally.
Wow. Yeah.
We did have a new record set this year. A gentleman in one day swung up 28 steelhead to hand and then went and grabbed a bead setup and caught 10 more.
Jeez. He landed
38 steelhead in one day.
Jeez. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to ask you this question too. Do you think that guy was sitting there feeling like, man, I'm tired of catching steelhead, or was he still jacked, ready to go?
Oh, he was so jacked. He was so jacked. I mean, all the guests and even and myself and my guides. I mean, you're just so jacked out there. I mean, yeah. Like the number that I just said, 38 steelhead to hand is ridiculous. Insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year in particular, they were the biggest we've ever seen. You know, in years past, most of the fish kind of averaged upper, mid upper 20s, you know, some mm-hmm. in the low 30s. This year, they all averaged over 30 and 8 to 10 pounds. I mean, there were some studs that we caught this year, but just on average, the fish were a lot larger this year. So it was silly all the way around.
Damn, that's so cool. So as far as the swing, like what, talk about that a little bit, the gear and the stuff for you guys. Is this just a all two-handed game sort of thing, or people doing some different things?
Yeah. So a lot of guests, as you know, in the realm of steelheading, love catching them on two-handed rods. And the Carluck is so suited to spey casting and two-handed casting. It's not too big. It's not too small. The river actually doesn't have all that many snags, unlike a lot of rivers in our neck of the woods where you're donating gear every 5 seconds to. Mm-hmm. The Carluck's pretty clean. So it's just perfect for swinging flies. And then obviously, as a lot of people know, in your neck of the woods is up here, a steelhead will always eat a bead. So we'll definitely have folks drifting bead setups under bobbers as we float down and then get out and swing the good runs, whether that be with a two-handed rod or a single-handed rod.
Right, right, right. And are you guys, is it a mix too? Are people using some like 13-foot, 12-foot, 11-foot, maybe even 10-foot spey rods? Or is it kind of, does it really matter what you use? Is it a big river, small river?
That's a medium river. You know, most of our guests are throwing, you know, kind of your standard 13-foot, 8-weight spey rod. Okay. I personally like just a little shorter rod. I like mine's a 12.6, I think.
Yep.
So it's very well suited to two-handed casting. You don't need to launch the line 100 feet like you do on a lot of rivers like in Canada and stuff. So it's a pretty user-friendly river. Yeah. You don't have to be a ninja with a spey rod to be successful there.
Nice. And are you guys doing the Skagit with tips, or is this more of a,
Yeah. So the Carluck, it's all, you know, just like most other rivers in Alaska, it's all freestone left to run at its own accord. 2 years ago, it was stupid low water and it was crazy. I mean, we were catching steelhead in 8 inches of water.
Oh, wow.
You know, just straight monofilament leader, no tips or nothing. This last year was definitely more of a normal year. We use the Skagit lines with intermediate heads, you know, for different depths on what you're fishing, whether it be, you know, we could definitely geek out, you know, is it better to have the fly above the steelhead to create a profile, or do you want it right in front of its face? So just kind of, you know, everyone's got their own means and methods for swinging.
Yeah. What was the fly? If you had to have one fly, did it matter? Is it kind of whatever?
This last 2 years, it really did not matter. In fact, we were trying to find a fly that didn't work because they were, I mean, big flies, small flies, dark flies, heavy flies, shallow flies,
everything.
Just these last 2 years, it didn't matter.
Wow.
Three years ago, though, was kind of interesting. More flesh looking flies were the trick. And I think that's because there was just
like white cream sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we fish a lot of flesh flies up here in Alaska, the articulated flesh. And they were just, I mean, it really had to be something fleshy for them to hit it 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But these last 2 years, it didn't matter. Big fly, small fly, heavy fly, bright fly, dark fly. It just,
whatever,
you know, got it out there and they were hitting it.
God, that's great. Are there also salmon? So this is, well, let's talk about the timing. So this is it's a short season, right? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So we run trips just out on Kodiak in the month of October. Our first launch is October 3rd. And then our launches are staggered every 4 days apart to allow the river to, you know, it's a good resource. We want to protect it and look after those wild steelheads. So we're not trying to hammer them and give them time in between. So it's a good product and most importantly, good for the fish.
Yeah. So it's just a September period, or what's the window?
No, October.
Oh, it's just October.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
We have caught steelhead there earlier. Obviously they're present, but for as far as having, you know, a good trip to get some of the numbers that I was talking about, October is the best bet.
It's October.
And it's kind of unique. It's just a fall fishery. You know, some of our steelhead rivers up here, like a lot in the Southeast, will have both either a fall and a spring, or just a spring or just a fall. Kodiak is just a fall fishery.
Okay. Yeah. So basically you go in there October, you can like get what, like 5-6 trips in, and that's kind of it. Pack them in there.
Yep. Yep.
Right on. Wow. This is great. And are there salmon and While you're
there, are
yeah, there are. There's everything.
Yeah. So in addition to steelhead, I mean, there are a ridiculous amount of sea run dolly slash Arctic char. I mean, just if you're throwing a bead out there, I mean, you could catch one damn near every cast. It's awesome. There's also resident rainbows as well. We got a couple 2-footers out of there this year. So it's good to see that diversity, as well as silver salmon and sockeye salmon. It actually has 2 runs of each of those species of salmon. So you get a bunch of variety and stuff that you can swing up there.
Gotcha. So pretty much, I mean, you got it all. It's got not only the steel, that's the thing, it's the bonus. You get the steelhead, but then you can do, but I imagine most guys are coming up for steelhead. That's the focus.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. I mean, everyone likes catching fish, but the steelhead are definitely the heart of these trips.
Okay, cool. Let's dig into a little on the history. This is something, and I don't know how much you know about the history of Kodiak, but like, how did you first, I mean, you told the story about figuring out Kodiak, but why Kodiak? Why did you, was it always Kodiak? Had you always been thinking Kodiak was going to be the place?
That's what I had dreamed about and was really hoping for, just because Kodiak is such a beautiful place. If one's never been there, it should definitely be on your to-do list, whether it be for steelhead, sightseeing, hunting. I mean, Kodiak is just an amazing, amazing place. And then knowing the size of the steelhead run there was, you know, a big draw for it as well, just because it is one of the largest runs in Alaska. Mm. You know, on an average year, it's around 6,000 wild steelhead return. And we've seen it as big as, I think, 8 and 10 on ADF&G. Yeah. And there will be some years where it's lower as well. But when you got that many steelhead in a system that's only 24 miles long from start to finish, that's a lot of steelhead
right.
per mile.
So that is, and that's just on, that's just Kodiak, just on
yep.
that system.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
On this
yeah.
particular system.
And when you look at Kodiak, I mean, yeah, when you look at the island, it is pretty crazy because, I mean, there's a lot of other, are there a lot of other rivers? I mean, can you go fish for steelhead in a bunch of other places on the island?
There are. There are a bunch of, well, you know, relative to its size,
yeah.
A lot of good fisheries, steelhead fisheries on the island, as well as, you know, tons of salmon, rainbows, everything. You know, Kodiak is synonymous with Alaskan fishing. And the history there on Kodiak is really cool. As I mentioned, we work with the Native Corporation. And when we were first checking it out, they actually have some of the oldest fish weirs in the world that the natives would build. And it's pretty cool to see these massive rocks that they had to have put there by hand.
Oh,
and
wow.
Just the dedication and strength it took for these people to get these big rocks. And they create these perfect Vs. And that's what will funnel the salmon. And that's how one of the ways they fished. And there's also lots of archaeological sites along the river where they've been. And, you know, humans have been fishing on Kodiak, you know, before time even began, before the Russian settlers showed up. And it's very cool to see that history when you're out there swinging a fly.
Wow. That is it. And what is, and when you're at Kodiak, how does Kodiak, how does it feel different than, say, you know, where we were fishing when we went up into that Trib? To the
Sisseton. Oh man,
is it a lot different?
Yeah, it is. Kodiak is just such a rugged, raw feel to it. You know, like where we were fishing, there's tons of trees and big birches and pines. You know, Kodiak is so raw, like there's really not that much tree life on this section of the island. So it's got this just very raw feel and these massive mountains that just, you know, literally come up out of the ocean. So you just have this very raw feeling to it. Whereas like where we were at, you know, there's highly vegetated, you know, it's a jungle.
Yeah.
You know, out in Kodiak, it's easy walking with the bear trails that they have created for us, because we do.
That's right.
Do you see a lot of bears?
That's right. So you see more, and that was the thing on our trip. So we didn't see any bears, although there were plenty of sign of bears.
Yep.
But so you see them on Kodiak, they're just everywhere.
Oh, they're everywhere. When we were first going out there, getting everything set up, we floated past, and just like the first mile, there was probably 60 bears. I mean, it was just furry,
okay.
Just lined with them.
Damn.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just hanging, totally used to it, not a big deal?
They're just hanging, fishing, yep.
Yeah, and you guys just fish around them, just if they want to take a spot, you kind of... And are they catching steelhead or just mainly salmon?
Mainly salmon. Yeah. I'm sure a bear has definitely tasted steelhead before, but for the most part, they're going for the salmon. You know, the sockeye run there is so huge, and that's, you know, really what they're focusing on is those sockeye salmon.
Okay. And do you guys, I mean, do you occasionally, is it hard to not catch salmon, or is it pretty easy to target the steelhead? Are they in different runs?
It's pretty easy to target the steelhead. I mean, obviously, with any sort of fishing, when you got that much life in there, you're going to catch some other stuff. So, yeah, definitely, you'll be swinging for steelhead in a perfect run and get some salmon or get some dollies. But for the most part, the spawned out salmon are pretty easy to see when we fish behind them. Yep.
That's right. Yeah, because October, there's the only thing left is what? There's some coho in there?
There's it actually gets two runs of sockeye. I mean, we've caught chromed out sockeye in October, which to me is wild. But they do have two runs of sockeye and two runs of silver.
Okay. God, that's got everything. All right. And so it's got, I mean, what doesn't have, I mean, what's the, when you look at it, it seems like it's got a little bit of everything. Is there, I mean, anything we're missing here that sheds light on what Kodiak is about? It just seems like one of those places you kind of have to experience to get really understand it.
Oh, it's so cool. I mean, we could sit here and talk till the cows came home, but until you actually get there and just see all the water, all the mountains, and how little evidence of humanity there is, it's pretty indescribable.
Yeah. Did you guys get a break from the rain?
We did. This year, the weather on Kodiak was awesome. I mean, out of all the places I fished and hunted, I've been stuck in Kodiak more times by leaps and bounds than anywhere else in Alaska. And when we book these trips, we always tell folks, you know, like, hey, we could get weathered in, we could be delayed getting out. You know, if the pilots don't want to fly and make money, there's a reason for that. We should listen to them. Mm-hmm. And this year it was perfect. The trip that I was on with a bunch of repeat guests, I mean, it was 55 and sunny. I mean, I think I put my rain jacket on maybe twice the entire trip. Yeah. It was phenomenal. Wow. Which doesn't always happen in Kodiak. It normally rains.
Gotcha.
But this year we got a little reprieve from the prior 5 months.
That's right. And are you guys at the cabins? Are you guys, there's kitchens? Are you cooking just like doing all that?
Yeah. Yep. So when we're at the lodge, obviously gourmet chef prepares everything, which is awesome. But then we're out on the river. We eat a lot of the food like you experienced, you know, on our trip, you know, it's guy food, good food, you know, steaks, ribs, fish tacos, that sort of stuff. But there's kitchenettes at the cabins where the guides prepare the meals.
Wow. All right. So this is it. And so if people were interested in doing this, I mean, it seems like, I mean, you guys have this operation. There's like one other, or are there a few other groups doing, other companies doing this?
No, we're the sole outfitter for the Kodiak Brown Bear.
Oh, wow. So it's just there you go.
Yeah, it's pretty, very, very cool.
Right. So that's it. So that's why if you do this trip, you're likely to not see many people at all. You might not see a person.
Correct.
Another trip. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. Well, what else should we shed light on here on Kodiak? I feel like there's some questions I have on just kind of gear and stuff like that. But it's pretty standard. If somebody wanted to get in on this, what should they do? Just give you a ring and check in with you?
Yep. So this year we're all sold out. I take that back. We have one spot left. And for 24, we already have 1 week, one launch that's already completely sold out. So
there you go.
Yeah.
And where else would people go? So we just had an episode that came out and a guy was talking about fishing. What's the really popular across the water, the ocean from you down? What's the other really popular?
The SeaTuck.
Yeah, SeaTuck. Right. Yep. And Will was talking about that on the podcast.
Yeah.
SeaTuck.
Yeah. Now the SeaTuck's a phenomenal river, but it just, you know, it's got good numbers of steelhead, wild steelhead. But in the realm of Alaska fishing, it's pretty easy to access. You fly into Yakutat.
Yeah.
The river's close. I mean, we go to the SeaTuck. I take the guides every spring. We go for fun, you know, team bonding and air quotes, or we go out.
Oh, you do? You guys do the SeaTuck?
Yeah. We just go for fun. I mean, it's a great fishery, but you know, when we were there this last spring, we went down and fished the lower bit and I counted 35 drift boat trailers.
Oh, wow. Oh, so they have, right. So it's way busier.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, but if you go there and just, you know, it's a great fishery, but just be prepared to see other people, just like most other steelhead fisheries, you know, steelhead are the unicorns and a lot of us like to chase them. And that's why Kodiak is kind of unique, just because it is so remote, definitely limits the amount of pressure that it receives.
That's it. Yeah. So that's why it's so, I mean, it is, we had that Russia, like you mentioned, you know, I mean, that's one of those places that's super remote as well. But yeah, I mean, other than Russia, you know, probably Kodiak. But, yeah. It's hard to find a place like that because even Skeena country, right? There's a lot of people up there.
Yep.
There's not a lot of places you can go. So it probably is Kodiak. I mean, what else is there, right? It's Kodiak, it's Russia. Those might be the top two.
Yep. And I just read that Kamchatka steelhead report that came out. and the numbers that we get, you know, anglers fishing for to hand, I mean, leaps and bounds more so than Kamchatka.
Yeah, that's cool. You must kind of pinch yourself, I'd imagine, you know, because it seems like, think about all the people in the world, you're sitting there on Kodiak.
Oh, man. I mean, Alaska fishing in general, some of the things that I say, like 25-year-old me guiding the things that come out of my mouth now, I just got to slap myself sometimes. It's like, dude, I just called a 19-inch fish small.
I know. I know.
I just said 38 steel and to hand.
Yeah.
Like, what in the absolute hell? I mean, this last year when we were out there, me and one of our other guys, well, Cam.
Cam.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Him and I just went out for a little evening sesh, and it was every cast. I mean, we were literally playing every other cast, boom, steelhead, boom, steelhead, boom, steelhead. I mean, it's just nuts.
And it's just downstream and across, just swinging, like, not a big deal. Yeah, swinging down. They're hitting. Are they hitting more on the swing, on the hang down, just everywhere?
Everywhere. I mean, my favorite is mid drift, and it just smacks that fly, and the line's instantly running upriver, but they'll hit it. You know, definitely on the downhang, tracking it across and hitting it when it downhangs there, mid-swing. Yeah. You know, we even had a few guests 2 years ago when it was super low. We're skating flies on the surface.
Oh, nice.
Got multiple to eat on the surface, and watching a steelhead come up and smack the surface was very cool.
God. Did you, were you using the lamps, and did that reel work at all for the, I'm not sure what, if you had that, you know, Nick's reel that.
Did have that on my single hand rod. Yeah.
Oh yeah. In single. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I have a loop for my, space setup that I enjoy. I love that noise. That ratcheting sound. Yep. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. And what in lines wise, you guys probably just a little bit of everything. What types?
Yeah, you know, just kind of any traditional shorter heavy grain Skagit head. You know, Rio makes a couple good ones. Yep. OPST makes a couple good ones, but just, you know, mass moves mass. Yeah. And those newer Skagit heads, you know, especially with some sort of mono running line, just make it so much easier. I mean, many years ago when I learned to spay cast, you know, I was on the Deschutes, traditional spay line, you know, if you didn't do everything perfect, it just didn't work, you know, and these new Skagit heads, it's basically just a roll cast on steroids, and it just makes it so much easier for people to get out and fish effectively.
It does.
And then if you know what you're doing, man, it's just so easy.
So do you get guys, I mean, what percentage of people coming in on these trips, say next year, are, you know, brand new to steelhead versus lots of skills?
Mostly lots of skills. You know, we do have a few folks who, you know, want the experience of getting out remote Kodiak and chasing steelhead and, you know, have dabbled in fly fishing. But I'd say probably 90% of our guests are hardcore steelhead fishermen.
Yeah.
And most 50%, I'd say, are all returning clientele.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, kind of get spoiled. With the numbers and the remoteness, and most folks come back again.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And Will, we had, I'll put a link in the episode to that. I can't remember the number. Will Donnelly, right? He's your head guide, and he...
The man, the myth, the legend.
Yeah, that was a fun one we did with Will, because he's got some stories that he's talking about, the using the Willie Nelson and picking up that fish on the Sea Tech. He's just got a style, and it's pretty awesome. And I've been working on Cam, getting him on soon as well. Who else is on your team? So you got Will and Cam. Do you have other staff out there during the summer?
Yeah. I have 10 full-time guys.
Oh, wow, you have 10, who,
Yeah. And the steelhead trips, as we talked earlier, you know, everyone wants to do them, but it's kind of more reserved for the senior staff who's been with me for a while, and obviously great guides work hard. But it is definitely, a hell of an experience and one that we want to do. So it's pretty much, senior staff out there doing those trips because they are so much freaking fun.
That's right. Yeah. So the younger staff you get in, and is that hard when you're finding new guides up there? Is that one of those places where you got kind of some turnover coming through because it is Alaska?
I'd say, I mean, I've been a guide. I'm 42, I've been a guide since I was 19. And I think guiding itself is just kind of a tertiary transient industry. You know, you get folks out of college or in the ski town, you know, guide for a few years, in contradiction to doing something like at a ski resort. So you have summer and seasonal work, you know, being a mountain bum, ski bum, trout bum.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll get guides who'll guide for, you know, 3-4 years and then move on. But then you have the other people that are like me and my senior staff. We're we're lifers. This is what we do. We love to do it. A few of my guys, you know, will guide down in South America in the off season and then come back to Alaska. So
yeah,
I'd say guiding as a whole is kind of a little transient, but most of my senior staff has been with me over 5 years, and Will's been with me since 2016.
Oh, wow. 16. Yeah. God, there you go. Yeah, man. Will's got the, I love when he's told the story about the van. He's got that. What's the van?
the trout van.
Yeah, the trout van. Thing is awesome.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Now, tell me about the trip. So you went down, visited Cam is down in Ecuador. Where's he at?
On the islands of Honduras. We're down there. Yep. And we all went down, did some great bone fishing. That was my first experience getting out on the flats.
How was that? And,
oh man, it's so cool. I have yet another addiction in fly fishing to now pursue. But it really reminded me of bow hunting for elk.
Oh, really?
You're stocking the flats. Those bonefish, they're so keyed up. They can hear, they can see, they can sense. I mean, it was an awesome experience. And just to see the power, like you always hear about bonefish and how they just instantly take you down into your backing. But to experience that and see, you know, relatively small bonefish, you know, 12, 15 inch bonefish on, you know, 12 pound fluoro on a, you know, little tiny shrimp pattern on an 8 weight, just instantly down into the backing is really incredible. And it's so cool. The ocean, you know, any fish that goes out to the ocean, whether it be steelhead, salmon, or, you know, saltwater flats fish, like they just have a different strength, because in the ocean, they're eating everything that's smaller than them, and everything that's bigger than them is trying to eat them. So you just have this, you know, just this, you know, survival of the fittest. And ocean fishing is awesome.
There you go.
Can't wait to go back.
And Cam, what's Cam's pad look like down there? He's got like a little spot down there.
Yeah, we're working on getting everything going down there. The islands, can't say enough good thing about the islands of the Honduras and the people and the food. And, you know, just island life is beautiful. It was definitely, we were down there for a few weeks and then to come back to Anchorage, where we have 5 feet of snow on top of my wife's car at the airport, was like, back to Alaska.
That's right. That's what Will said. Will said that when he came back, he was like, it was the one few trips where, you know, usually he's ready to come back, but this one, he was like, man, he didn't want to leave.
He
was loving it down there, and I could see that. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So you guys, so how's it looking now? So we're in the middle of, well, winter, I guess maybe we're coming out of it, but you got to, I mean, when do you start really getting ready to jump into another summer season in Alaska?
Well, we, you know, actively market all winter long, booking. We got a bunch of remote multi-day trips already booked for this year. In fact, our season is, for the most part, for multi-days, already pretty booked up. We still do have a few good windows here and there. But yeah, just busy getting stuff going. And then our season commercially kicks off the first part of May and start fishing. We'll be out. We go on, like I said earlier, we go on an annual steelhead trip, guide trip to the SeaTuck. And then once we get back from that, getting the boats pumped up and getting the chainsaws fired up to go clear out all the logs that get run down in spring runoff and get folks fishing.
Oh, right. Yeah. You guys got to clear, you guys got to get up on the rivers and actually make sure they're floatable.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. We did have that cool little section that we floated, a little whitewater section, which was pretty easy, right? What was it? The water was higher, so it made it easier this year.
Yeah.
Right on.
It was fun. That was such a good trip. But yeah, the water was definitely cranking. Normally in September, the water is typically come down by that time. But yeah, this year was still thumping.
Right on. Nice. Well, let's take it out of here. If you're good to go, unless you want anything else we want to shed light on before we do our 2 minute drill and take us out of here.
No. It's, you know, Kodiak is a place that we should all get to experience. And for those of us who are steelhead addicts, there's really nothing else like it.
Yeah. No, I think, and you're talking to a lot of steelhead addicts for sure. We've built the start of this podcast on steelhead, you know, and it's a addiction for me as well. We were out in Ohio this year. That was really interesting too. I mean, talking to the people in the Great Lakes, there's just so many people, the steelhead, that just shows you how crazy it is. Right. I mean,
you mean Lake Run Rainbows?
Yeah, that's right. That's what Liskay said. He said, no, they're not steelhead. He's, you know, he made that point, but I like to joke around and just call them steelhead.
We get spoiled up here in Alaska, but now they're steelhead, but they're Lake Run.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like kind of the dichotomy in fishing in Alaska versus, you know, the lower 48, because up here we have a couple great river systems that have lake run rainbows that are fluvial. They go from the lakes to the rivers. Mm. And up here, they're very adamant about saying, no, they're not steelhead. Mm. These are rainbows.
Right.
Whereas down there, they're very adamant. No, these are steelhead. So it's just kind of funny, the dichotomy between the two.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, so the fish that migrate. So you got steelhead for sure, but then you got these fish, rainbows, that aren't going to the ocean, but they're migrating into the bigger rivers. Is that what you're saying?
No, they go to the lake. So there's a couple big systems up here that have massive lakes, like Iliamna Lake, Kenai Lake, and these fish will basically live in the lake, but then come down into the rivers to feed and to spawn.
Yeah.
And they're just very adamant up here that, nope, these are not steelhead. These are rainbows.
Those are rainbows. Yeah. Although there's probably lots of overlap between steelhead and rainbows and over millennia, right? Who knows? All that.
Yeah. The science and biology behind rainbows is so cool. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of rainforest steel, but, you know, the underwater photography and studies that have gone on with steelhead and interbreedings between rainbows and steelhead, it's very cool.
Yeah. John McMillan, I'll put a link out. We did an episode with John. It's actually a really great one because he broke down, you know, there have been ups and downs in steelhead and we are in a down cycle, but it is coming back slowly.
Yep.
It doesn't seem like Kodiak had the same down, but the whole Pacific Rim has kind of been down.
I hope not.
Yeah. I think it is. It's looking better in a lot of places. But John had a really positive outlook on it. You know, I think and there's other people that Niska we had on, he's up in the Skeena. And so I feel like, and the runs have been better, you know, fishing's been better and all that stuff. And it's good. But yeah, we'll definitely, Rainforest Steel, man, that guy, John's on it. We'll put a link out to him for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's do a quick little 2-minute drill and we'll see if we can. We still haven't, since I've implemented this, done actually successfully complete the 2-minute drill, but let's see if this will be the first time. We're going to set the clock. We're going to set the clock right now. We're going to do the timer and we got 2 minutes. All right. These will be real easy questions. And here we go. All right. The first one is, maybe we talked about this, but what's your one fly for steelhead? You got to put on one fly wherever you are. What is it?
Hobos Bay.
Yeah, Hobos Bay. Nice. And what's your one steelhead rod? So anywhere, not just Kodiak, but wherever. What are you going with? Length, weight, what is that rod?
12, 6, 7.
Yeah, 7 weight, right?
Yep.
Perfect. What's your one tip for a steelhead angler? If they were coming up maybe on your trip or wherever and they maybe haven't caught a steelhead yet, what are you telling them?
Skagit line with mono running line.
Yeah.
For swinging.
Yeah. And the mono is just, I mean, yeah, what else is there, right? There is some other stuff, but mono is so.
They have that coated running line. That's pretty good, but just the Rio makes a good one. OPST makes a good one, but just no memory, no coil, shoots well. You don't have to have it all coiled in each of your five fingers to get an effective cast. You know, it's kind of like cheating, but it makes it easier.
That's it. And what's your big trip? What bucket list trip? You're up there living in Alaska, so you got that nailed. What else? Where else do you want to go next?
Well, I'm doing it. I'm going to Bolivia in June to chase Golden Dorado high in the Amazon Mountains, which I cannot wait.
There you go. Cool. Is that with Nervous Waters?
No. We're Fish Hound Expeditions. We're working with Untamed Angling.
Untamed. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but Samani Lodge. Yeah, cannot wait. Got 4 good guests coming with us and can't wait to be chasing those golden unicorns. Can't wait.
Yeah, another one. Perfect. And finally, give us some tunes to come out of here. What are you going to be listening to this week, today, tomorrow on music? What give us a song, group, anything?
I've been listening to a lot of Tool and a lot of Misfits. My 2-year-old daughter, I got her a Misfits record for Christmas, and she absolutely loves old school punk. So I've been listening to a lot.
Oh, perfect. Misfits. Yep. Misfits it is, right? We'll put that in show notes. Awesome, Adam. Well, we did it. 2-minute drill is a wrap.
First time
we were successful. This is awesome. So we'll send everybody out to fishhoundexpeditions.com if they want to book a trip with you. And doesn't sound like there's a lot left now, but maybe they could check on steelhead at least for if they are interested in steelhead, maybe down the line.
Steelhead for 2024,
2024, perfect.
There is one spot left for 23. So if there's single angler out there who wants to come join us, please reach out.
Perfect. All right, Adam. Well, thanks again for digging a little bit deeper in here, and we'll be in touch until we get the next one out there. Thanks again for the time.
Thanks, Dave.
So there you are. Another one of those amazing trips. If you want to learn more, you can head over to wetflyswing.com/418. 418 is where you got to go to check back on and catch up with Adam right now. Find out if he's got some openings for this trip to Kodiak for some crazy steelhead fishing and everything else that Kodiak has to offer. Quick listener shout out before we get out of here. Soren sent a great email. He says that he was from originally from Transylvania, Romania, where he grew up and fished some of the rivers out in that part of the world. And he immigrated to Michigan about 25 years ago. And he gave me a great email, a great idea for an episode about getting some information out there on just guiding and doing guiding, you know, some tips on doing it the right way. Just some of the details we really haven't dug into yet. So I'm not going to go deep on that email, but I will say I am going to put together an episode for Soren. And Soren, I appreciate you for reaching out. Let me know you're listening here. And excited to put this one together for you. And if you want to check in with me, if you've got an idea for an episode or want to get a shout out on this podcast, you can check in with me anytime. Just send an email, dave@wetflyswing.com, and we will do our best. And we will likely put together an episode for you. So shout out to Soren today. That's our end of the show. Big shout out to our listener, Soren. Thanks for your support of the podcast. And we're going to be heading into the next phase of the podcast, and we're going to be taking a look at what is coming up right now. What do we have coming up? But before we get to what we have coming up, I'm just going to give a quick shout out to the Euro School that we have going. We just wrapped up the giveaway last week. It was a great event. Had a bunch of people fired up, and now we're just looking to fill a couple of the paid slots. So if you're interested in getting on this trip, heading out with Pete Erickson and myself and his team to learn and scale up your Euro game, whether you haven't done it, if it's brand new to you or you're an expert, Pete's got his finger on the pulse. Everything new in the Euro game, they just came off of a gold medal win. So it doesn't get any bigger than this. Pete is the man. He was there at the beginning when the Euro game started changing in this country. And now they're at the top of the game. And we're also heading out to the Henry's Fork, South Fork of the Snake, some of the great rivers in the West. So we're really going to be leveling up everything on this trip. Again, send me an email, dave@wetflyswing.com, if you want to check in on this and get your spot. All right. Well, just shout out to everybody here that's listening still to the very end. And definitely would love to see you on that Euro School. Would love to get on the river with you. That would be amazing. If I can't, then shoot me a message. Drop me a line. Just let me know you're listening. Let me know. See if what I can do, if I can put together an episode, that would be amazing. All right, I'm going to get out of here. I hope right now that you are having a good afternoon. Hope you're having a good evening or good morning, wherever in the world you are right now. And I look forward to serving you next time on the Wet Fly Swing podcast. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.